Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo.
And tonight we have a special guest, Tex Mars. Actually, it's a recorded interview that we did with him yesterday on our FM show, Q103.3, out of Lakeville, Connecticut. And Tex Mars talks about his idea of what happened in the Gulf, in that horrible disaster, that horrible week of the British Petroleum well, and what he thinks happened and why it happened. He has an interesting idea. He has some facts to back it up, and he's going to talk about it. And he talks about it for about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And he just weaves everything together.
We're going to have a follow-up with him next Wednesday. We'll be doing it on Tuesday night, next Tuesday night as well. Second part of the conversation with him. But in case
you don't know, Tex Mars is the founder of the Power of Prophecy Ministry. He's the author of many, many books, among them Codex Magica. And he also has a new book.
Conspiracy World.
Yep, Conspiracy World, that's out. And he's got many, many DVDs on all kinds of subjects.
Oh, yeah.
Pyramids, the Illuminati,
he's an expert in it.
He does lots of research in this area. He's a great guest because he's so interesting and he knows so much.
Yeah.
So I think you'll really find his ideas and what happened in the Gulf, the Gulf Coast. You see if it makes sense to you.
Yeah. I think it's important to read this. This one sure seems to be.
We have a little news before he comes on. That'll be on in about 15 minutes.
These are the people behind the Tea Party, some of the industrialists and behind the Tea Party. And I think it's kind of interesting.
I'm sure they all have a lot of money.
Yeah. Zionist billionaires define U.S. political discourse. This is by Henry Mackow, Ph.D., and as his site. The September 20 issue of The New Yorker contains a profile of David and Charles Koch, the billionaire brothers who are waging a war against Obama. According to the article by Jane Meyer, the Koch bankroll, a plethora of
libertarian and right-wing lobbies, think tanks, and foundations, which in turn fund and direct the grassroots Tea Party movement.
The anti-government fervor infusing the 2010 elections represents a political triumph for the Koches, she writes. By giving money to educate, fund, and organize Tea Party protesters, they have helped turn their private agenda into a mass movement.
Meyer neglects to mention that the Koches are Jews or crypto-Jews. Instead, she tries to give them a goy gloss.
Patriarch Fred Koch, a founding member of the John Birch Society, was a real John Wayne type. He was the son of a Dutch printer who emphasized rugged pursuits. He took his four sons big game hunting in Africa and made them do farm labor at the family ranch. It's surprising, then, to learn that Fred and his sons are on a list of Jewish billionaires, and Free Enterprise Fred made his fortune building refineries for the genocidal communist dictator Joseph Stalin in the 1930s.
Liberals whinge about these nefarious rednecks who oppose Obamacare and climate change and lobby for less taxes and government interference, but that's not the real story here. The real story is that Jane Meyer works for another Illuminati Jewish billionaire, publisher Sam Newhouse. Her job is to create the illusion of free democratic discourse.
New York Times.
Between the Sam Newhouses and the George Soroses on the left, and the Koches and the Rupert Murdochs on the right, a dozen Illuminati, Masonic Jewish billionaires are able to define political discourse in America. So while we're busy arguing about government intervention, we ignore the long list of things these billionaires apparently agree on. Israel, 9/11, the war on terror, the wars in Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan, the Federal Reserve, trillion-dollar bank bailouts, liberal immigration policy, and equal rights for gays and lesbians, that is, undermining marriage and family by promoting homosexual norms. You can bet they also secretly agree on world government.
Now, what's odd about this is that he's the founder of the John Birch Society.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's so very strange, because the Birch Society is not...
It doesn't agree with any of those things.
And that is nothing... that is why nothing important changes. This is why crack dealers and bathhouse boy Barack Obama is our president. And why the conservative alternative is Wasilla, a.k.a. Sarah Palin. The billionaires of Zion are laughing up their sleeves at the Goyim. And that, which makes me laugh, because if that was exposed by Wayne Madsen about the bathhouse
Obama's group
being gay and the whole group in Chicago. He's got on the Madsen report. You can check that out. The Koch Empire.
Koch Industries is the second largest private company in America after Cargill. With an annual revenue of $100 billion, the company was just $6.3 billion shy of first place in 2008. Ownership is kept strictly in the family, and the company being split roughly between brothers Charles and David Koch are worth about $20 billion apiece. Today, it operates thousands of miles of pipelines in the United States, refines 800,000 barrels of crude oil daily, buys and sells the most asphalt in the nation. It is among the top 10 cattle producers and among the 50 largest landowners. According to the New Yorker, the company has grown spectacularly since their father, Fred, died in 1967, and the brothers took charge. The company expanded at an unreal rate. Its revenues increased from $100 million in 1966 to $100 billion in 2008. That's a 1,000-fold growth. The Kochs operate oil refineries in Alaska, Texas, and Minnesota, and control some 4,000 miles of pipeline. Koch Industries owns Brawny Paper Towels, Dixie Koch, Georgia Pacific Lumber, Stainmaster Carpet, and Lycra, among other products.
According to researcher Yasha Levine, part of this growth was fueled by corruption. William Koch, the third brother, who had a falling out with Charles and David back in the 80s, Charles' sociopathic management style, appeared on 60 Minutes in November 2000 to tell the world that Koch Industries was a criminal enterprise. It was my family's company. I was out of it, he says. But that's what happened. That's what appalled me so much. I did not want my family, my legacy, my father's legacy, to be based upon organized crime. And Charles Koch's racket was very simple, explained William. With its extensive oil pipe network, Koch Industries' role as an oil middleman, it buys crude from someone's well and sells it to a refinery. Makes it easy to steal millions of dollars worth of oil by skimming just a little off the top of each transaction, or what they call cheating measurements in the oil trade. And according to William, wells located on federal and Native American lands were prime targets of the Koch scam.
Well, that was back in the old days. They called that totem privileges.
Totem privileges, yeah. And Fred Koch and the John Birch Society. Now, rich Illuminati Jews and Masons not only created communism in Russia, they created anti-communism in the USA. Fred Koch was a chemical engineer who invented a new process of refining oil. Supposedly, he was shut out of the U.S. by the Rockefellers and had to go work for Stalin. He built many refineries in Soviet Russia and trained Russian engineers to operate them. Supposedly, he became disillusioned with communism and became a founding member of the John Birch Society in the 1950s. The trouble is that according to the 1964-65 edition of Who's Who, this militant anti-communist was still building refineries in Russia and Eastern Europe. Moreover, the John Birch Society was founded by members of the Council on Foreign Relations, many of whom were Masons and staffed by former communist writers. Holy jeez. All right, was I screwed over? I always thought that John Birch was straight folks, man. Holy
shit.
Probably
most of them don't know that.
I don't think so. For example, the founding Robert Welch had been a member of a Communist Front League for Industrial Democracy. William Creed agreed for many years, chairman of the executive council of JBS, was Fed banker. Robert Love, member of the governing council, was a 32nd degree Mason. William McMillan was a member of the CFR. Writer Eugene Lyons and Henry and Harold Varney used to work for the Communist Workers' World. Holy Christ. All right. And this was exposed by Helen Peters' article entitled, Is the JBS Subversive? July 1970. And Ralph Epperson was on their speakers bureau. We almost interviewed him. But they expelled him from the JBS when he mentioned Freemasonry as one of the speeches in one of his speeches somewhere. The JBS strongly does not want Freemasonry mentioned. Same apples to Zionism.
The same applies to Zionism.
Yeah, according to Eudes Miller, the founder, Robert Wells, was a 32nd degree Mason. Holy Christ.
Illuminati insider Harold Rosenthal explained how they fit labor on the left versus management on the right. In modern industry, capital, which force we represent, is at the apex. Both management and labor are on the base of this triangle. They continually stand opposed to each other. Excuse me. I think I'm going to sneeze.
And their attention is never directed to the head of their problem. At first, by controlling the banking system, we were able to control corporation capital. Through this, we acquired total monopoly of the movie industry, the radio networks, and the newly developing television media. The printing industry, newspapers, periodicals, and teaching journals had already fallen into our hands. The richest plum was later to come when we took over the publication of all school materials. Though through these vehicles, we could mold public opinion to suit our own purposes, and the people are only stupid pigs that grunt and squeal the chance we give them, whether they be truth or lies.
Thus, the Illuminati have a monopoly over our minds. By controlling both left and right, education and the mass media, the Masonic Jewish billionaires ensure that the masses are tractable. As the late, great Alan Stang warned, the Tea Party is a psyop meant to channel the patriot movement into the left versus right matrix. Politics is like house league and sports. The different teams all are Masons or beholden to them. Thus, there's little chance of democratic change. Anyone who wants to play must abide by the rules. It's amusing to see progressives all rail against the Tea Party and their sponsors. They're as much billionaire puppets as the rednecks they condemn.
The Illuminati Jewish billionaires have used anti-Semitism to give themselves immunity from criticism. However, they are responsible for anti-Semitism and for the suffering of their fellow Jews. Therefore, they don't deserve such consideration.
That's a good article.
That's interesting.
Now, who wrote that again?
This is by Macau, Henry Macau.
Now, who is he?
He's
see his name on a lot of things.
Yeah, well, I pull up a lot of his things. You know, I use some of his stuff. I can look him up, but it's like...
He's a researcher.
Yeah, he's a writer, a researcher. And
what does it say at the end? It might say something about him.
I don't think so. It's a comment.
Oh, he's going on the bottom, very bottom. Henry Macro is the author of A Long Way to Go for a Date. He received a PhD in English Literature from the University of Toronto.
He welcomes your feedback and ideas. Okay. Henry at SaveTheMails.ca. Interesting fellow. He's kind of a theorist, but he, you know, he gets a lot of his facts straight. And I've used his work. I've read his work many times on here. Now let's see. We got one more. I don't see what else there is about this info on InfoWars one. Tea Party Sarah is a neocon.
Yep.
Okay. Sarah Palin delivered a speech prior to her keynote at the Republican Tea Party Fest in Nashville, scheduled for this weekend. In addition to touching on government spending and the bankster bailout, Palin said the underwear bomber, Umar, whatever his name is,
Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab.
Yeah, why even bother? Should have been grilled before he was read his Miranda rights. We need a commander-in-chief, not a professor of constitutional law, she said. In fact, Obama was not a professor of constitutional law. He was a senior lecturer at the University of Chicago Law School. In academia, there is a vast difference between the two titles. Not that we should expect Palin or her scriptwriters to get it right. Palin, the darling of the Tea Party movement, or the one hijacked by status neocons, is merely echoing the Republican idea that supposed terrorists accused by the government do not deserve Fifth Amendment protection and should be shuffled off to a torture camp in Gitmo. In other words,
right away.
Yeah. In other words, if the government says somebody is a terrorist, then they don't have the right to remain silent. If the government says you're a terrorist, well then, by gosh, you must be one. And neocons say skipping the Fifth Amendment is crucial in such cases because the government needs to get actionable intelligence from terrorists. Man, this is Bush,
isn't
it? But this kind of intelligence what kind of intelligence would they get, Mr. Fizzle Pants? You fought for that he was escorted to the airport in Amsterdam by a well-dressed Indian man who then obviously a military or intelligence operative. No neocons expect us to believe that if government...
Do neocons expect us to believe that if the government waterboarded Abdulmutallab, they would get information on sleeper cells or nefarious plots in the making by Al-Qaeda, the phantom terrorist group cobbled together by the CIA. Palin supports the neocon concept of forever war against Muslims. In this respect, she is just like Obama in the Democratic version of Bush's neocons. In December, Tea Party Sarah lauded Obama's decision to send another 30,000 troops into the Afghan meat grinder. At long last, President Obama decided to give his military commanders much of what they need to accomplish the missions in Afghanistan, Palin said.
Palin wrote on her Facebook in December 1st, 2009. We now have an opportunity to build a bipartisan involvement, blah, 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 blah. She's such a piece of work. Anyway, but she's a neocon. She's a piece of shit. And let's get rid of her. Nobody cares about Sarah Palin. And U.S. House puts Ocean Coast under UN. Senate vote will seal the deal. Too late. It's just have to stop the Senate, Tom. The young male answering the phone, blah, 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 on H.R. 3534 Clear Act. The globalist bill designed to give away our land, oceans, adjacent land masses, and like
Great Lakes
to an international body and makes us pay $900 million per year until 2040. The H.R. 3534 is a thinly disguised permanent roadblock to American energy, which drives American companies out of the Gulf, delays future drilling, increases dependency on foreign oil. This is right up the where we're going to be talking about tonight. Implements climate change legislation and youth education programs. But most important, it mandates membership in the Law of the Sea Treaty without the required two-thirds vote to ratify it in the Senate.
Oh, how sick is that deal?
We're getting so screwed, folks. So screwed over. Where is this?
The House passed the CLEAR Act July 30th, 2010. This bill was originally introduced July 8th, 2009, was resurrected by the recent Deepwater Horizon oil spill crisis. According to government .us, a debate may be taking place on a companion bill in the Senate rather than on this particular bill. This bill was read for the second time August 4, 2010, and placed on Senate legislative calendar under General Orders calendar number 510. No official Senate bill number exists as yet. Some have said that this bill would be a long shot to be approved in the Senate or will take a while to surface. Similar assessments were made about the health care bill. So,
this whole thing is a crock of crap. I'm telling you, if I had $1 billion, I'd run for president right now. You know what? I'd be out there. Would you be first lady?
don't believe in that position.
Well, what do you think we should be?
I think it should be a president and then...
And co-president?
No, I don't believe in
like
that either. I don't think the First Lady should have the influence that they do, really.
Well, how can they not? It's like a wife having no influence over her husband.
Yeah, I don't know. It's evolved into a role that it was never intended to be.
Well, doesn't Bill and Hillary have a... Doesn't you think Bill answers the phone?
I don't know. I think so. Yeah.
But anyway, it's a sick, sick world. And I think you're going to find with this information we have tonight, it's even sicker than you think. But that's all right, folks. We got faith.
Yeah, Tim did a nice job on this.
I hope it plays well tonight. And hope you enjoy it.
Well, right on.
Here we go. And away we go.
It's great to have you with us. I was reading one of your newsletters, and I said to Leo, gosh, we haven't had Tex on for a while. We need to talk to him. And you were, like all of the rest of the world, Leo and I are also very interested as to what happened with the BP spill in the Gulf.
And also, I wanted to talk a little bit about your book, The Conspiracy World, as well. But especially right now... it looks like we got a serious problem with the Gulf Coast here, and there's been a lot of lies and a lot of conspiracies here. What's your take on that, Tex?
Well, you know, this is really part of a bigger picture, Leo. And at first, like everyone, you read the press and they tell you the official version of what happened.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it seems one of these freak accidents and men lose their lives on the derrick, oil derrick, and then this horrendous release of this gooey, almost a rubbery type of oil goes shoots across the Gulf and ruins the economy of many of the southern and the Gulf states,
right,
all the way down. Really, it hadn't affected Texas very much, but there's been a great fear here in our state as well. So it seems as simple as that. And BP, British Petroleum, it used to be called now just BP, one of the largest, I think the third largest petroleum companies in the world, seems to be the culprit of bad maintenance or, you know,
mm-hmm.
Not doing the job they're supposed to be or whatever. And so they set up this fund of $30 billion, and they're processing claims, and now they're putting ads on TV telling us they're going to stay there till the job gets done, etc. Meanwhile, of course, many people have lost their livelihoods, their work, and they're suffering. But actually, there's a big, broad picture to all of this, and I think we need to look at what really is going on. This is really a historic pattern
mm-hmm.
that we can trace, I believe, all the way back to the early 20th century, when the largest oil field in the world at the time, in Baku, Azerbaijan, which quickly became, with Lenin and Stalin and Trotsky, the 1917 communist takeover of the Soviet Empire, became a captive republic of the communists. But at that time, the oil fields in Baku were the largest in the world, and strangely enough, you would think that Vladimir Lenin, as the new communist czar of the Soviet Union, would cherish, the possibility of owning the largest oil field in the entire world.
Yeah.
And that oil field, by the way, was at the time. Owned by three huge corporations. One was the Standard Oil Corporation. The other was the Rothschild Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, owned by the Rothschilds, a very wealthy Rothschild Jewish dynasty of Europe. Rockefeller, of course, owned Standard Oil. And along with a smaller group of, run by the Nobel family, Nobel Peace Prize and such fame from Sweden, were in there too. But basically what really happened was that the price of oil had gone very low, and both Rockefeller and Rothschild were unhappy being competitors, because when you compete, you drive the prices of things down, right?
Yeah.
We know that when you have two department stores or two gas stations or two anything competing for customers, to do so, they're going to drive the prices down. But if there's a monopoly, a cartel, they can easily, make the price whatever they want. So Rothschild and Rockefeller got together and said, if we make a pact with Lenin and the communists to invade and take over the country of Azerbaijan, and listen to this, and to torch, in other words, to totally destroy our oil derricks in Baku, that is the world's largest oil field, we will actually make money. Now think about that. Destroying their own oil fields owned by Rothschild and Rockefeller did the trick of driving the price. The price of oil per barrel tripled within 2 or 3 years after Baku was torched. Lenin sent his troops in. They massacred hundreds of thousands of people. They shut down the oil the big oil derricks and so forth. They sunk all the oil tankers. Most people don't know, but that's where oil tankers, the huge ships, began operating. They were invented by Nobel, and they began operating there and going around the world bringing oil. So basically, Baku was ruined. It was destroyed as an oil resource. But Rockefeller at the time, he was so angry because the price of oil had dropped to like 10 cents a barrel, and he made the statement, quote, "Competition is a sin."
I remember
the world's greatest capitalist actually said, "Competition is a sin."
I remember that quote. I remember that, yes.
So are you saying that they've done the same thing for the same reasons in the...
They have done the same thing now. You have to understand, with the Great World Recession, the price of oil, you remember it had rocketed up to $147 a barrel
in
2007.
Yep.
It really broke the back of the world's economy that was already collapsing because of the subprime mortgage scam and so forth. But when the oil went up to $147 a barrel, the price of gasoline shot up to $4 or $5 a gallon in America, that was the end of the American economy. And the price of oil quickly fell, and it went really around $32 a barrel.
That's right. I remember when it went to about $1.89 a gallon back, it was $2.08, I think.
Right, now with oil at $32 a barrel, the price of gasoline under $2 a gallon,
right.
The powers that be said, we cannot allow this. There's too much oil. This is planet petroleum. Oil is coming out our ears. Everywhere you turn around, new oil fields are discovered. In Brazil, in the Falklands, off of Argentina, everywhere. With this new oil drilling technology, the ability to go very deep underwater and so forth, there's more oil than the world will, and I want to emphasize this to your audience, there is more oil than the world could ever use in thousands of years, and much of it is in the Gulf of Mexico. Chevron, BP, and others have discovered that there's more oil sitting off of Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana, Florida coast, in the Gulf of Mexico, then is found in all of the rest of the world combined.
Oh, my.
Now, so they said, what are we going to do? Not only that, down south of us, Mexico, Pemex, that is owned by the Mexican billionaires under the guise of being a government corporation, also had found, drilled and found new sources of oil. Which could have made the Mexican people super rich, just like the Kuwaitis, the Saudi Arabians, and the United Arab Emirates and so forth. And their plan is to merge Mexico, the United States, and Canada into a North American Union. If Mexico gets to be a rich oil power, like in the Middle East, then guess what? The Mexicans won't have to drive north because they're so desperate for jobs to support their families and so forth. And that will be a foul of their plan. They want millions and millions of illegal immigrants to smash into America, to sneak into America, to destroy this nation, to merge the, to end the borders entirely. This is the plan, and create the North American Union. That won't happen as long as Mexico is rich. So they have, of course, deprived Mexico of all of its minerals and all of its oil for so long. At the same time, down in Brazil, the greatest oil discovery in the history of the world was made by a Brazilian oil company known as Petrobras, or Petro Brazil,
mm-hmm.
Petroleum Brasilio. And they say there's more oil there than is found in the entire Middle East.
Well, you know the amazing thing about Brazil is that it's the only country in the world that claims itself completely oil-free.
They're not dependent on it.
They're not dependent on it. Ethanol. It's the irony is absurd, actually.
Argentina has found a gigantic store of oil in what they call the Malvinas Islands, the Falklands.
Yep.
And as a consequence, Britain has now sent submarines and warships down to the Falklands again. These are armed at an American submarine base, by the way, in Georgia. I think it's called King's Island. I'm sorry, I'll have to go back and do my little research here again. But basically, what people don't know is there's a gigantic submarine base in Kings Island, Georgia, near Florida. And there's where they actually arm these giant submarines, the Tridents and so forth, with nuclear weapons, underwater mines and so forth. The British submarines, operating on agreement with the United States, actually go into port there, and we, our naval personnel, actually arm and maintain British submarines. These British submarines go down and patrol down in South America to make sure the Argentinians don't try to take the Malvinas Islands like they did some 20 years ago. So basically, my opinion is, and it's based on quite a bit of documentation, is that the United States could not possibly get American naval personnel to blow up one of our oil derricks. I have to say that the American military is not that jaded yet that they're going to do that horrible deed. So I believe that they used a British submarine armed from at King's Island, they took it over and blew up that derrick. Now, they would have done it with an underwater mine, a bomb that goes underwater. Now, it's not like the old days of World War II. You remember they had these big barrel-like contraptions?
Yeah.
They would throw them off the side of the ship.
Yeah, right. Depth charges, yeah.
Yeah, depth charges, exactly, Leo. And those would, float down and hopefully would hit the submarine that submerged their hiding out.
Right.
We've seen all those old wartime movies.
Right.
But now they have these underwater mine bombs that actually they are operated just like precision-guided munitions in aircraft. And, I was in the Air Force for over 20 years, retired as an officer. Amazingly able to navigate, to make these underwater mines go anywhere they want to. They can travel miles, and everything is being watched on video back in the submarine. Now, here's an amazing thing. On my website, powerofprophecy.com, I have a picture of one of these undersea bombs or mines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In perfectly good shape that evidently, though, turned out to be a dud. And it did not explode. Of course, they had enough to explode and blow up the derrick. But this particular underwater bomb or mine did not go off. And it washed ashore in Alabama.
And who picked that up? How did you find out about it?
Well, I was just doing some research one time into all this about the cleanup of BP.
Yeah.
And suddenly this little thing came up, on my computer. I'm a pretty good researcher. And it mentioned that Channel 5 News out of Mobile, Alabama, that some citizens there had said that the BP cleanup workers had found a bomb that had floated ashore. They were cleaning up the oil there, and a citizen of that little town I forget the name of the town, it's a very small town, called up Channel 5 News and said, hey, there's a bomb here. Mm-hmm. The BP workers found that we were looking out of our home about 200 yards away, and we saw this thing wash ashore, and the BP workers then came up on it. They called the Coast Guard, and now they got the whole place cordoned off with wire fencing. And they said, so Channel 5 News rushed to the scene, and from the fence area, they were not able to get in, and they were waiting at that time. The BP workers were waiting on the Coast Guard to come in. And they actually filmed the bomb sitting there. And you ought to see it. It's a bomb that has these spikes all over it. You could tell, it's almost a sure bet that the Coast Guard, if they're questioned on this, will say, oh, that was an old World War II.
Right, right, yeah.
Bomb, undersea mine that didn't go off. Well, no, it looks exactly like the new ones. I know what the new ones look like. There's no barnacles on it. There's no moss on it. It's a perfect condition from the outside. Huge cylindrical or circular undersea bomb. And as I said, what happened was the Coast Guard came, and as Channel 5 was actually taping it, they took it away. But on I was able to capture, I don't know if it's only, this was not reported in any of the national news, but I have the film of it. You'll see the thing sitting there, the waves lapping up to it right on the shore of where it was discovered. So there was an undersea bomb there. So, I'm pretty persuaded that probably the British submarines that now admittedly are operating down in South America, and they must be maintained, must get their fuel and their armaments and so forth. Now, I have in my possession also, I did a little research on Kings Island Naval Submarine Base, and there they have the Global Submarine Warfare Strategy Center, and flying out in front of it is not only the United States flag, the naval pennant, or whatever you want to call it, banner, flag, but also the Union Jack of Great Britain, flying right there on a U.S. naval base. So at the headquarters of the Warfare Center. So this is both a British and a U.S. Base operating there. It's the largest in the world, I understand, largest in the U.S. Navy. And it's right there, right next to the Gulf. They would just sweep around Florida and go into the Gulf of Mexico and do their dirty work. So I believe this is what happened. Now, why did they do it? You remember that Obama immediately declared a moratorium on drilling.
Yep.
And so their plan was to force the Americans, and believe me, now they're going to make sure that drilling, they're going to come up with a blizzard of detailed regulations and such to prevent more drilling in the coastal areas all around the United States. Meanwhile, there's a huge oil find up in Montana, south and North Dakota, called the Bakken Oil Formation. You can Google that up, Bakken. There is more oil, believe it or not, found in North and South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana in the Bakken Oil Formation. And there's thousands of oil field workers up there right now. There's more oil there than is found in the entire Middle East. And I believe that they're going to close that down. Meanwhile, one of the largest pipelines up in Alaska is owned by BP, and they're claiming that it's corroded,
right,
and may spring leaks, and they're going to be closing it down.
Yeah, a large part of it was broke, actually. They showed it. I remember seeing it.
Now, whether it really is broke and defective or not, I don't know, but what they want to do is tell the Americans, we're so sorry, but we cannot allow the drilling anymore because of these pollution problems, the environmental problems. And, of course,
right,
it is true. I mean, look at what happened to down south there in y'all's area and so forth. So my point is what we've got here is a closing down of the Gulf of Mexico and much of American oil. Now, that makes us dependent then on foreign sources.
Right.
And this is what the elite want to happen because... And here comes the second part of the big picture. What Americans don't know is that the Iraqi nation was invaded to seize their oil. Iraq is now the second largest producer of oil in the entire world. Iran could be third. Saudi Arabia, of course, is first. But here's the deal. Iraq was invaded. Their oil fields taken over. And now they have built a new pipeline and repaired the old one that goes across to the west. And now it comes through Israel, and there on the Mediterranean, huge tankers are coming constantly back and forth to the ports there in mid and northern Israel. At the same time, one of the reasons why Israel bombed, massacred, and now controls southern Lebanon is because in the ports of southern Lebanon, these huge oil tankers that are coming in, and there has been a huge pipeline built to that. In other words, the Iraqi oil, the world's second largest producer, all that oil is being stolen from the Iraq people with some piddly payoffs to some of the imams and the puppets that we placed in power in Baghdad. But the oil is coming across Israel and Lebanon into these tankers. Now, who owns these tankers? Well, guess who? A company named BP, and which is mainly owned by the Rothschild dynasty, and they own these huge tankers. Now, where are these tankers going? Well, listen to this. The next part of the puzzle comes clear. These tankers are going across the globe and traversing over to Red China.
Oh.
Red China has a gigantic growing community or economy. And you can check this out, and believe me, I invite people to investigate. China has very little oil of its own. There's some off, the coast of China, certainly down in Vietnam and so forth. There's oil off the coast. But basically, China did not have enough oil. It had to buy oil. Now what they're doing is they're bringing the oil into China and to a lesser extent to India, which also is booming. Now, notice something. In the last 3 years, the American economy has been really wounded. Europe has been hurt badly. But the Chinese economy has been galloping at 30, 40% growth a year.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, this year, it's so overheated that the Chinese are actually trying to get it down to only a 10% growth. Now, remember, the only thing China had going for it was all of their goods that were sold to the Europeans in America.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was made in China that we were buying, right?
Yep.
Furniture, auto parts, everything made in China, like it used to be made in Japan. But with the recession, Americans were no longer buying the toys, the toilet products, the furniture, all the products from China. China should have gone totally bankrupt, but instead it has the most powerful growing economy on earth because the oil of Iraq is being laundered into China. And then China has built, get this now, America has four
oil
refineries in the whole nation, 300 million people, four refineries. They say the environmentalists won't let us build anymore, which is poppycock.
Mm-hmm.
But China, in the last 7 to 10 years, has built 25 new refineries. And before, a Chinese oil company was not even in the top 100 of the Earth's oil companies. But guess what? PetroChina, the largest oil company in Red China, is now the world's fifth largest oil company, and within a few short years, by 2015, it is said that it will replace ExxonMobil as the largest oil company in the world. This, a nation that has very little native oil on its lands, but what they have now is that the United States, the Wall Street billionaires, working with the Rothschilds of Europe, now own all this oil. And the Israeli banks are absolutely booming. They're bulging at the seams with oil money. And keep in mind, in Tel Aviv, the financial capital of Israel, is where these banks are booming. Israel and Red China are the two countries in the world that are the most prosperous during this recession. And it's an understandable thing because of the oil that is being laundered by Red China. Meanwhile, Red China refines this oil into gasoline and so forth, other products, and sells it to other nations in the world. Hmm. We are now beginning to buy huge amounts of Chinese oil.
This is criminal. This is absolutely criminal.
And to force us into buying the Chinese oil and continuing to buy the oil of the Middle East, they're closing down all of the American oil outlets. Right. That means the Gulf of Mexico had to go. At the same time, they're also closing up Pemex's oil derricks out of Mexico. They don't need to blow them up. They just do it. The Mexican people don't have the power to stop the Illuminati elite from doing it.
No, they have to.
Even Petrobras down in Brazil has been given a quota. So I want people to understand something. The price of gasoline, of oil, has now gone back up from 32. Even during world recession, it's now selling for about $73 a barrel.
Hmm.
But believe me, it may well go back up to that 147 level in a few short years, especially if they continue to close up the spigot of the American oil. So this is what's really going on, and I wanted people to understand this. Now, what folks don't understand is that all the Illuminati elite are working together. You know, when our Federal Reserve was given all these, not just $700 billion, but they spent probably $35 trillion that they printed electronically. And this money has been distributed to all these foreign banks. One of the banks that benefited from this, I believe, is HSBC Bank. If you want to do some research, you'll find that there's a gigantic bank conglomerate that has grown in the last 5 years called HSBC. It and Goldman Sachs are the two most powerful banks in the world. HSBC is an acronym for Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation. It operates its headquarters out of London, England, where the Rothschilds are. But it has branches, of course, all over China. And they have bought up about 200 and something other banks in the last 5 years alone. And not only that, it has come out that HSBC, in collusion with J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, now sets the price of gold for the whole world. So they control the gold markets and the gold futures markets, and they determine the price of gold. At the same time, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, two other Illuminati banks, control the price of oil. And here's another little thing that's absolutely astonishing. I mean, I've never heard anything like this in my life. Goldman Sachs is a bank, right?
Yeah.
Perhaps the world's largest bank.
Mm-hmm.
Goldman Sachs is operating in Red China and has built 100,000 warehouses. 100,000 warehouses, gigantic warehouses, bigger than, you know, 10 airplane hangars, and they have been buying from across the world copper, lumber, aluminum, steel, iron ore, every type of material possibly, and hauling them to China and stacking them in all of these warehouses, 100,000. In fact, to do this, Goldman Sachs went out and spent billions of dollars to buy the largest warehouse construction firm in the world that is now operating in Red China almost exclusively. And again, go to Google and Google up warehouse, Goldman Sachs Bank, and you'll see what I mean about them buying up this warehousing company. Now, why would one of the largest banks in the world buy a warehouse construction company and go to Red China and build up 100,000 warehouses? And by the way, all of these these base materials, the corporations that own them, whether it's Freeport-McMoRan, Southern Copper, U.S. Steel, their stocks have been going straight up.
Well, they would with all that purchasing, right?
Exactly. And here's another thing. They've also been storing gigantic amounts of surplus food. And nobody understands, but I'll tell you, there's a reason why Warren Buffett bought for a premium price one of the largest railroad corporations in North America.
Hmm.
Right at the height of the recession,
yeah.
He goes in and buys, what was it, the United Union Pacific or one of them?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
and
the reason why is because they knew what was happening. Now, the only manufacturing going on in America, basically, is U.S. Steel and these other companies that are selling all these products, and the agricultural, ConAgra, Archer Daniels Midland, because, believe me, train loads of corn, soybeans, wheat are now being shipped across America to the ports of Long Beach and L.A. and so forth and Seattle. And huge cargo ships are now taking all these foodstuffs and materials over to Red China.
So they're hoarding it over there.
Check, if you don't believe me, check the transportation index. Not counting necessarily the airlines, and you'll find that railroads and all these other companies have been just in the midst of a poverty-stricken America suffering. They have been, I mean, they've been making billions of profits because they're bringing all this stuff to China. What they're doing is creating a colossus of evil. Red China is the model for what they want the whole world to be.
Oh, my God.
It's communist and capitalist synthesized. It's the Hegelian dialectic. Communism and capitalist being mixed together, brought together as one to create an entirely new creature that shall envelop the whole world. Now, people like Maurice Strong used to be, you know, the down in Colorado, and he owned all the water rights to Colorado and so forth, the
right.
big
right.
Canadian billionaire. He was head of the United Nations Environmental Program.
Mm-hmm.
He now resides in Red China. Neil and Malin Bush, the two Bush brothers,
they
now live in Red China. They've built huge country clubs where all these billionaires, the Bushes, and that's where, you know, remember when Clinton was in office, he was accepting millions in bribes from the Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
He still is. He's still brokering for the Chinese.
Yeah, he really is, and Hillary, too.
Yeah, Hillary, too, yeah.
But what we have to know, and this is an incredible thing, and it took me many years of study, and I have to say God gave me a lot of help, to discover that at the very root of Chinese communist society has always been Jewish red communist. And this is what I exposed in my newsletter, in my special report. I did not know that Mao Zedong was actually a Freemason who was trained by members of the Order of Skull and Bones and other Masonic Jews, and they sponsored him. He was just a stupid peasant, you know, but they sponsored him. And thus he grew. And you'll remember that everybody was confounded because Truman, as president, who was a 33rd degree Mason, and I believe was part of this conspiracy, Truman actually cut off all foreign aid and military help to the nationalist regime that was very pro-America, led by Chiang Kai-shek.
Right.
And with that being cut off, then the communists in the Soviet Union and elsewhere were able to funnel all the supplies and money, and I believe the United States was doing it behind the scenes, to Mao Zedong. Now, Mao Zedong had all of these Western advisors from the United States with names like Epstein and Shapiro. You get the picture, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they ran his propaganda. They ran his financial house.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically, these Western Jews control Red China behind the scenes. And I actually have pictures of these communist Jews who went over to Red China and Hepta Mao Tse-Tung to found his communist empire in my newsletter, in my newsletter report. So this is what we're up against now, that everything is coming together, but Red China is the colossus, and that's why, you know, in my newsletter this month, I don't know if you have the September edition.
Yes.
There's a picture of posters that have spread about in Red China with Barack Obama dressed in Mao garb. He has a little cap with a red star on it. And the peasant, you know, frock or whatever you call it, tunic, a jacket, coat. And he's given the communist, you know, power to the people salute. And underneath it says, Obamao.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah, thanks, and I remember that. You know,
these vendors actually had thousands of T-shirts with a picture of Obama in a Mao costume.
That's right. Yeah,
the communist salute.
I saw that.
Were selling them on the street corners.
That's right.
This is really interesting.
It's fantastic.
They know that Barack Obama is a socialist communist.
Right.
And that really the game is that America is to be deconstructed. What they call it, you know, Alan Greenspan used to call it creative destruction.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The build-up of America, of Red China, and the beat-down of America. This is their plan. And I call this empire Rothschild's Black Gold Empire.
Yes, for sure. Listen, I just wanted to mention, I have this article that I pulled up tonight. I was going to read it tonight, but I didn't have time. But it says, Mao's Great Leap Forward killed 45 million people in 4 years. Mao's...
Well, number of people.
45 million of them in 4 years. And this was reported by Redacted News.
And Rockefeller was very aware of all that. He prayed.
Well, they were all part of it. But the thing that I wanted to ask you, because we discussed this earlier about the Gulf Coast, there's an article that just came up that I read from interviews that were done by Dar Jamal in the Gulf, and he interviewed people and doctors down there, and there's a group of doctors called Barefoot Doctors because they're working with nothing basically against the system here, but they're saying that what's happening down there is entire communities are extremely ill, vomiting blood and hemorrhaging blood. Okay, that this is caused by the core exit, but the core exit dispersant. And he's also saying that this thing also said it was by Deborah Dupree who wrote it, but she also said that. According to Griffith, and we're going to just say it, these acts are all part of Agenda 21, including the relocation, taking over the land, full control of survivors, and depopulation. What's your feel on that? Do you believe that this is part of the... It has to be all part of the Agenda 21, using these chemical sprays and trying and destroying these entire areas economically and ecologically. You know, for decades and decades to come. Do you believe that that's part of the Agenda 21?
I do, Leo. And it makes sense. If you go back to the late 60s and the 70s, when they had a report, a very mysterious book came out entitled The Report from Iron Mountain.
Absolutely right. Yep.
And in that, it was said that the elite needed... rather than World War, which, you know, was a little chancy and risky sometimes,
right.
It was decided that there needed to be other means by which to organize and rule the world and create a new world order. And the greatest of all would be the environmental movement, which, of course, was in its infancy at the time. And they said that in order to spur the environmental movement to become a global thing, that they actually needed to enhance the pollution of the world. In other words, it was necessary to dirty the world. And, you know, at that time, it is true, there were many rivers polluted and you know, factories and such. And
Batteries
belched out a lot of chemicals into waterways. So there was no doubt that America certainly needed to clean up things a bit. But the plot was to actually to dirty things up even more. In other words, to create an incredible amount of pollution in a short period of time, just open up the spigots, let's say, of pollution, so that people would be so angered and so upset that they would then, you know, agree to have this incredible...
I'm sorry. Yeah, excuse me one second. I'm just going to turn this over. And... okay. Hope you're enjoying that. Show's pretty much done already, so I want to thank everybody for joining me. And sorry we didn't get to the end of that. But next week we will have a follow-up to this story, and with Tex. So please join us then. Tomorrow night we will venture into the fourth dimension. And they'll be reading some esoteric texts. And Friday night we will be joined by George Dixon once more. And George informed me that he'd like to, he's going to take us further into the sixth night here. We're right at the very near the end of the sixth night, entering into the seventh day of the galactic period. And, you know, I think we're going to, time is changing fast and faster and faster, and we're just unbelievably fast. So we will be able to, we'll be talking about that and why it's speeding up and the effects that it's having on us. And, hopefully we'll be able to clarify a few things for you on Friday with George. So thank you for joining me, and have a pleasant evening. Good night.